zijn Ingrid en Gara, founders of NoCo.
This is a series of podcasts, Business of Collaboration, a conversation with a professor and a business executive.
Once per month, we interview a professor and a business on how to work together to find a common understanding and inspiration.
So subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and on our website noco.net. Join us in our journey. Today, we're in Brussels at the third EIT Digital Annual Conference. Our guests today for the Business of Collaboration podcast are two directors for this organization. Anders Vleutstroom is Chief Academic Officer for EIT Digital and also a professor at physics at KTH in Stockholm in Sweden. Patrick Esses is Director of the Node in the Netherlands. EIT Digital is the leading European digital innovation and entrepreneurial education organization driving Europe's digital transformation. It delivers breakthrough digital innovations to the market and breeds entrepreneurial talent for economic growth and improved quality of life in Europe.
We discuss how to find the right startup for a company and how to mix educational programs on digitalization and digital transformation with startups and corporates in Europe. We will learn about best practices on how to help startups to collaborate with corporates. If you want to know more about Patrick and Anders, you can read the interviews at noco.net. Welcome, Patrick. Welcome, Anders. We are here in Brussels in the EIT Digital Conference. This is our Business of Collaboration podcast.
Yeah.
I think, Patrick, we met 2 or 3 years ago when I was looking for a job in EIT Digital.
I think it was 2 years ago. Well, it might be 3 years ago, but the first edition of the EIT Digital Conference here in Brussels where we met. Then we started indeed with the conversation and we kept the contact. So that's always good to do. And you see the result, you are here again.
Yeah, it's very funny. We had always long conversations talking about how to work with startups and corporates.
Yes.
And I believe innovation is only possible through collaboration.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Yeah.
Anders, you were very difficult to reach.
That's my purpose.
It's an honor to have you here. Really, thank you.
And we start with the first question for our listeners. We know what EIT Digital is, but can you explain a bit more and what it stands for?
Yes, I mean, EIT Digital is both a pre-name and a surname. I mean, but the other way around. So EIT is common for a number of projects, you could call it, or initiatives started by the EU Commission to meet Europe's global challenges. I mean, we were EIT Digital, EIT Climate, and EIT InnoEnergy was the first three selected for the first three challenges. And actually, EIT Digital was the real first one. I know that because I was in the first board for EIT, and then the commissioner had a talk, and or rather it was President Barroso did it, and he had the first talk, and he said, "You make any choice, but EIT Digital should be the first one."
Yeah.
And this was 2007,
wow.
So I mean, it was really some foresight.
Yeah.
I mean, the template, if you put it this way, for the activities was that the innovation should, for the first time, take a place within universities, within companies, in a concrete way. I mean, at university, you were used to that. You were coupling research and education.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, if you didn't do that, you were not a real university.
Yeah.
But innovation was novelty.
So that was the mission, to bring innovation closer to the business?
Yes,
like
closer to the businesses,
yes,
and closer to the universities.
Yeah.
Which have always, of course, been the two engines of European development.
Yeah.
I mean, much more perhaps than in other parts of the world, that major companies and major universities together push. I mean, you can go to Holland and Philips with And Ericsson is synonym to Sweden, or yes, was at some time, and Siemens and Bosch and SAP in Europe. I mean,
Well, that's true. And also what you mentioned, Anders, when you look to innovation, when you start inventing things and you develop new products, as long as you don't bring them to the market, it's a waste of time. So it's the business impact you really should get before something is happening. And I think that's also the reason why we have this this EIT, the European Institute for Innovation and Technology.
So looking at that, I see your goal is to accelerate the digital startups in Europe. It's also to bring startups towards the businesses and facilitate collaboration between them all.
Yeah, I think there, and I think our policy has changed a bit. I mean, in the beginning, when we were looking at creating a more innovative Europe, I mean, startups played a very important role. And they still do, but I mean, we realized that when we got a bit older and someone told us that we should get less funding from EIT and from the Commission, we would need to become sustainable in some way. And it's very hard to make money out of startups. But accelerators are a bit easier, and so I think that's why we are now sort of a risk-taking company, providing accelerators with the financing, competence, and market perspectives.
Yeah. No. So what you see when you look at startups and when you look at startups in the ICT, the amount of startups becoming successful in ICT is only 2 to 4%. So, as said by Anders, when we started in 2010 with the EIT Digital, we started with the startups, and then realized if you want to become more sustainable, you need to focus more on the scale-ups. So our approach now is that we focus on the scale-ups, and these are the startups who pass the valley of death. And after that, they approach another valley of death, that's the second valley of death, because you first have to build your product, and there you have the technical issues. And the second value of that, you become in the problem of financial issues.
So
you have to grow your market, and you have to grow also the capital you need for growing the business. Yeah. So, and that's also where we are working on. Access to market and access to finance are the two main areas where we accelerate the companies.
So how do you help them on those two levels, the finance and the market?
When you look to access to market, there we have in Europe around 40 business developers active. Okay. So in every one of the 9 countries where we are active, we have our own business developers. Yeah. Business developers focusing on the 5 areas where we are responsible for. So digital infrastructure, where you look at cybersecurity, Internet of Things, and then the 4 segments like digital cities, industries, well-being, and finance. And you need that specialist who has an in-depth knowledge of the market in your country. So therefore we have 4 to 5 business developers in each of these countries. And they are able to make the connection for the startup, for the scale-up, towards the large enterprises to get them connected, because that's what you need.
The lessons learned, I would say, almost, because I think myself and I think a few others in the beginning believed that we will automatically be pan-European by being represented at the different places in Europe. So, I mean, it would be very easy to transfer from one of the centers out in Europe. So, I mean, we could immediately tell a company, we multiply your market with 9, I mean, directly. And it doesn't work that way. I mean, the local ecosystems are local,
still
even if they're...
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. That's an important part.
That's an important part for the business developer. They are accessing the market for those scale-ups. And they do that by spotting scale-ups in their own market. Yeah. So they are continuously looking. And of course, there are scale-ups knocking on our door, but they also search for them. And on the other hand, if, for example, a company from Germany wants to enter the Dutch market, they help them So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, you have this access to finance.
Yeah.
Because if you start growing, you need money. And the typical amount of money they need are Series A funds. So between 1 and 10 million. And we have the connections towards the investors, so both the venture capitalists as also the private equity companies, where we can connect them to. And the good thing of EIT Digital there is that we do the pre-assessment before they go to this venture capital.
Yeah, so they are already interested in the scale-up, so to say.
Correct. So if we don't think that might be of interest for the venture capitalists or private equity fund, we do not go there. And we have now, I think, around 300 of these investors in our network, and 7 of our people are financial experts. So in every country, more or less, we have one of these financial experts who is able then to make the connection for these funds.
So those, they are the same people. The business developers are doing the market, and the finance experts are doing the finance?
There are different competences.
Yes.
I mean, with the people we have. If I look a bit into the future, I mean, In this, it's a very unfair world because, as you say, I mean they are past the Death Valley. I mean, but still, I mean, the ones who make most money and on companies are those that invest latest.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the risk taking becomes less and less. So. So when the banks get in, I mean, they are already quite established, but they still need capital. And yeah. So they can make a risk assessment that they can put a lot of money in, and that will dilute our shares.
Yeah.
I saw the other day now that the European Investment Fund, which we have been talking to, now has been kicked out of European Investment Bank, and are going to be operating on themselves. They got to bring the capital they already have and made them into it. So it wouldn't surprise me if at some place we will talk and get into this access of finance with some partner like that and see, I mean, if we can go even in third round or fourth round financing in the name of sustainability, so to say.
Absolutely.
I don't know if the commission will allow us to do it, I mean, but yeah, it's still, I mean, scale-ups are much better than startups in becoming sustainable, but I don't think they're, or it's optimum to have a portfolio only with scale-ups.
Yeah, because we need as well startups and seed investment.
Yeah, we need both startups and we need also the others. So perhaps in the growth process, we will see a very different EIT.
Yeah, but startups, we create our own startups as well. Eh? Mm. So on the one hand, the accelerator is this access to market system and the innovation activities we do with the universities, with the research technology organization, but also with the industry partners. They are working on or creating a new product service which is brought to the market by one of the enterprises, or create a startup out of the universities, out of the research and technology organization. We call this valorization. And there you see with these startups, and you can see here on the exhibition a number of them.
Yeah.
Yes, there you see that the real entrepreneurs from the university, from the research technology organization, they take this also to the market. And we follow them. We offer them a soft landing at one of the co-location centers in the countries where we are in. Our business developers help them as well. But of course, they have to grow. And first, they have to pass the first valley of death.
I mean, first, when it comes to startup coming from our student cohorts, I mean, they are also there a part of the educational experience. So, I mean, it's not only to become companies.
No.
I mean, it's they are real cases for trying and for learning in this case. When it comes to the research or innovation groups we have at the universities and at the companies, it's, of course, a bit different. I mean, if you look at the universities, a typical rule of thumb is that it takes 100 students to to get one startup to that 100 students for one startup that are
successful.
Yeah, semi-successful. It takes off and it takes about 10 faculty. So to get it. So I mean, it's a bit easy, but if you look at the typical university, it's 1,000 faculty and 10,000 students. So it turns out that the force, innovation force, is about the same in this case. But I mean, it's so I mean that track exists. I mean, but I don't say, I mean it's one of the tracks, as Patrick says.
And looking at the startups who you're helping to scale up, what are you doing for these startups? How are you helping them to become a scale up as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where we could improve. I say, especially, I mean, from the education part. I mean, I think some of the students carrying ideas in different contexts do not think that we are eager enough to be there with them, and I think the truth is somewhere in between. I mean, some ideas is just printing new patterns on t-shirts. So it's the first time they meet someone who have that idea, and of course that's it's not always a nice experience. But sometimes I think we could be a bit more persistent.
When you look at the corporates, take for instance, like in the Netherlands, you have the business developers bridging the gap between scale-ups and corporates. How many corporates, for instance, are we talking about?
Well, you can't have a connection to all corporates. So when you look to the pan-European ecosystem we have, we now have more than 180 members. When you look to the split there, many are universities. Yeah. Then you have the research technology organizations. But the larger extent are the enterprises, so the businesses. When I talk about the Netherlands, in the Netherlands we have now about 29 members. Mm-hmm. Four of them are universities, so the three technical universities and University of Utrecht. Yeah. We try to scale up there as well because, as I said earlier, with this valorization, you can help the universities in doing so. We have a number of research technology organizations like TNO, the Center for Mathematics and Informatics, CWI. We have EMEC Hall Center in Eindhoven. So you have a group of these companies, but the rest are the businesses. And then you see the split between the large enterprises who became member first, like Philips, like NXP, like OSE, and so on. And on the other hand, I now see more and more coming the small and medium-sized enterprises. And what I see is that the large enterprises are like a mammoth tanker. They are moving into a certain direction, but they are massive. And if they have to change course, it will take them a while to change the course. And these small and medium-sized enterprises, but also the startups and the scale-ups we see, they are like the speedboats. They are already in the horizon, they are checking what's going on, what kind of new technology, the deep tech we see, can be used in new products, in new solutions. And there you should make this connection, this collaboration.
And how do you see the big enterprises? Corporates can work together or collaborating with them, with the scale-ups?
They work together with these scale-ups, absolutely. We had in the Netherlands, maybe you don't know that, Anders, but we had a program called COSTA, Corporates and Startups. Where you see that it's very important that the corporates have an understanding what the startups are doing. And they work together. Of course, if you do a merger and acquisition of these startups or scale-ups, then you get into the problems of different culture, big processes, and you kill almost the startup. Because they are more flexible way of working. You saw this morning as well with MagicX. A different culture compared to the large enterprises.
There is also a dimension, I mean, which has changed in time. When you have to realize that there was a certain number of certain universities and a certain number of big companies that actually started, gave the proposal for EIT Digital. And of course, these first partners. They looked upon themselves as they looked upon it as it was their money. I mean we started to get the management, you were getting Willem there, you were getting people there that had the management idea about how this should change to become sustainable, to grow. Of course, these companies will look upon this as not the profitable one. Some of them changed, and there is a managed body that moves according to a strategy. It doesn't work all the time, I mean, but that's more part of normal management failures. But I mean, I think now I would call it that the IT Digital is an own body, an own legal unit, that drives innovation and entrepreneurship and companies within this digital area.
And how do you match a scale-up with a certain corporate? I can imagine a corporate is looking for a specific technology or product. How did you match them?
So very often the request is more on the technology or on the product.
Yeah.
So we bring them in contact with companies who are looking for that solution. And they are selling, the startup scale-up is selling their solution towards that enterprise. So we don't see so often the mergers and acquisitions, no.
I mean, we are not a player in that aspect, but I think many of our accelerators look upon us as fair. I mean, that we want to do the best for them.
Absolutely.
And there is no hidden agendas. I think that's one of the trust moments. I mean,
yes. No, I fully agree with that. Maybe that has also to do with the origin of EIT Digital, where we are a not-for-profit organization. And if you are a profit organization, like a venture capital, you have to make your profit.
Yeah.
On the other hand, our organization is changing as well, so we need to become more sustainable as well. So we ask money for it. And I think it's good to ask money for the activities you do, because there is nothing such as a free lunch.
And you give value to your services.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you make them also aware of what are the real costs of what we are doing for you. And if you are not willing to pay for it, you don't get it.
What I experience firsthand from a business perspective is that when companies work with professors, they often tend to think that knowledge is free because it came from a public institution. What we are creating with NoCo is the possibility to monetize that value. Why shouldn't a professor ask to be paid for a phone call when he shares knowledge?
True. Everything has a value, and you should pay for that.
But that's a bit part of, I mean, it is a bit different in Europe. I mean, this is part of the success story with Nordic countries, and that is that the universities do not own the IPR. I mean, on things I've invented, I mean, as a university professor, it's my IPR. So there can be no deal without me getting involved in it.
It's different.
So the backside is, of course, that you have to get the money for develop it yourself, because the university do not care about it, but the front, it's the other.
Professional.
And we have had for a while, American professors were very, very fond of coming and visit me at KTH because they could create the IPR there. So that was called the IPR holiday. But I mean, this is, of course, sort of a complex. But I think us being independent, I mean, is the independent of system, I think, is still important. And it's also important from the sense, now it's a bit politics, now they create something called the European Innovation Council. I mean, which is going to work exactly like the European Research Council. It's just going to give a grant for an innovation and that's it. Mm-hmm. They don't care. It's a funding, and I mean, what we have, we are of course doing that too, but we are also changing the system. We add something to the system that makes it better. I mean, in a way, so I think our role should be recognized. I mean, we're just not in the lottery of funding companies. We are also in changing the way things are done.
And which brings me to the other important pillar, the educational pillar.
Yes.
You have developed as well.
Yeah, and it is necessary as well, as you could hear this morning from Timesis. There is this need for talent. If we are transforming the world into a digital world, you need the talents who are able to build the necessary solutions for that. And I think what Andras from the beginning did in setting up this education organization, and this is what we need with your master school, your doctoral school, the professional school.
So is this the Digital Academy?
Yes.
That's the Digital Academy. I think Digital Academy was Karen's
invention.
And I think that's great, because it says something about what we are for.
Yeah.
We are not for specific pillars.
And what is your vision for your education in Europe if we are looking at the Digital Academy, for instance?
The way we constructed the education, I mean, look at the master school is the biggest one. It's quite simple. I mean, we looked at the digital master programs in Europe, and we said, what is missing in all these master programs? And I said, what's missing is that students learn nothing about business, they learn nothing about ethics, they learn nothing about leadership. There are a lot of things missing that they need to know if they're going to be taking part
in
digital transformation. Yeah. And then we did the simple thing. We told the universities, you take out one semester and you give that semester to us, and we will arrange for bringing in these new things. And we run it the same over all Europe, but of course it's run by university teachers. We educate them to do it, or we pay universities for hire them. Yeah. But the technical programs looks the same, and that's both sort of a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because we know we have stable, good quality. A bad thing because we know that universities take ages before they change.
That's
the biggest challenge to convince them.
Yeah.
I mean, when they see our figures they see that when cloud was becoming important, cloud infrastructure program was up here, and they were all students. And now, 2 years later, cloud infrastructure is down here, and up here is autonomous systems.
Yeah.
And we are prepared to live this way, but they are not prepared to live this way. I mean, so that's the one of the...
The need for changing.
Yeah, so it's... but essentially, the basic idea is that we bring in the business, we bring in the soft skills, and then if you mingle them then with the right technical skills, you get a good education program. The other things we to be able to do that, I mean, we use a methodology which is called the ERB. And that is that you do this integrated. So I mean, the students need to have projects where they had to mix what they learned, what they like to innovate, and what they like to do business. And that means that when they summer school, it's case studies coming from companies.
Yeah.
When they do internships, real internships, mixing these,
so involve the companies,
so that's the methodology, and that's not easy, but it's getting better and better. And the final is that, but that's a bit different, is that we said from the beginning that we're going to use online format as complement
for studying.
So all students' lectures on the innovation courses are both mixed online.
Okay. So they can choose.
They can choose whatever. I mean, if a student has a project or needs to know about, for example, IPR, let's say we have 5-6 lectures mm-hmm. on different aspects of IPR, and those are accessible.
I have a question here. How do you mix it all together? Startups, academics, corporates, and a university program? But I think you just answered it now. This is a win-win that helped the scale-up who is working with the corporate and students.
I can tell you a fun story. I had a meeting with the Stockholm new startups community about consulting community about these internships, and we were agreed upon. They said it's beautiful. We're gonna have no problem. We have as many internships as you need. And then in the end of the meeting, I said something must be wrong. And then a guy said, and of course, you will pay the same consulting fee as anyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was.
No-go.
It was a no-go, yeah.
No, and I think, in addition to what Anders already said, when you look to how we mix things together, mm-hmm. we have every year a summer school organized yeah. between the entry year for the master school students and the exit year. And that's in one of the 5 themes. Infrastructure, industry, and so on. What we do there is that we bring in cases from our scale-ups. We bring in cases from our innovation activities. We bring in cases from our large enterprises, small and medium-sized enterprises. And the students start working on those. And in 2 weeks' time, a multidisciplinary team of the students, Anders mentioned we have 7 master themes,
yeah.
they are working together and solving the problem. And that's actually a grand mix, you see.
And it's a win-win because it's helping the scale-up as well.
Yeah.
Or the corporate who
yeah.
gives
yeah.
the case study in this case.
And another alternative, what I see in our co-location center in Eindhoven is that we have post-master graduates. So when they are finished their master's thesis, they can start working in one of our innovation activities. So they directly bring in the newest ideas from university into our innovation activities, and that stimulates the organizations as well.
Yeah,
so this is the real ERB integration.
It's education. The real ERB. Yeah. Then I mean you can take this further. I mean I was at the Climate Kick Summer School. They are 6 weeks, not 2 weeks. I mean, and they are 3 different places, and they do an undertaking a bit longer. I mean, with the scale up, I mean, in this case. So they also put up the organization. So you could ask, who's the marketing responsible? And there was one student. And who's the technology mentor? There was another. So, I mean, they sort of, and I think this was mostly done to show, I mean, what functions do you need, I mean, once you're going to be.
And I have a final question for you. What is your success story you are most proud of? I've already heard from some success stories, but what is a success story you really want to share with us and the listeners?
Well, I mean, I think from education, I think the master school in itself is a success story. I mean, I think it's the first. I think the first time that when there's been a European initiative constructed. According to new way of doing
yeah.
things that been pushed through, and we now have a couple of thousand alumnus coming out. When it comes to success stories on the doctoral school, I would say that they are more hidden in the specific topic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have some topics with some students that has really been the start of startups that's been very successful. So, I mean, it's more on the individual level. When it comes, if you ask the students about success stories and what they remember from being with us, it's the summer schools. because it's summer, it's nice, it's no new location, it's good food, it's good company, and you meet a lot of experienced business developers.
Correct.
You can ask about anything. So that's, and when it comes to the professional school, we have been struggling to get the right touch. I mean, so hopefully now with this collaboration with Berkeley on executive summer executive professional schools, we will get a success story we can quote.
So next year.
Now, when I look to the Netherlands, we have many successes we could talk about. One of the nicest successes I see, when I started in 2015 as director of the Dutch organization, there was a startup at our premises, and they were in the beginning with four or five people, and we helped them a bit on the topics they were addressing, and we then helped them in an innovation activity working on that, and they started growing. Now this company, an Eindhoven-based company, is more than 80 people big. They are running in our organization more than four innovation activities. Wow. They work a lot together with our master school students. They have a post-master graduate in their company. And I think we were talking about this real ERP integration. So helping a startup becoming a scale-up, working with the ERP integration, I think that's a real success story.
And
I'm proud of.
The corporate and working back again.
Correct.
Helping others to innovate.
Yes,
and,
yes. And they bring back also the value to our organization.
Yeah.
And this is something where I'm proud of.
Well, that's a perfect one to end.
Yeah. No, and I think in the end, I mean, once we have 10,000 master students and we have 1,000 scale-ups in the alumni, I mean, then we will be a major player in this. And then,
yeah, absolutely. Then the world has been digitally transformed.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're
welcome.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. As usual, you can find a sum up of this podcast with pictures and interviews at nocco.net. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our account is nocco platform. See you next month.